You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi everyone, welcome. I apologize for any audio chaos and nasal sounds you hear. It's been an interesting week around the Hoffman household. This week, though, we're doing an interesting movie corresponding with the release of another movie, Tomb Raider, which is a movie that I'm surprised they remade, but they remade the video game 6 times, so I guess I can't be surprised at anything. With that in mind, please, I promise this will be the last time, but with the new equipment finally figured out, there might be some mild audio issues, but this one sounded the best in a while. And, well, whatever. I mean, it's a stupid movie, and I hope that the audio makes it worth your time. Cineprov. Go to cineprov.com, join the Facebook group, see us there, join the Myopia group. We've been exploding lately since we were featured on Podbean, but help us spread the word through your means, because you guys reach out to friends directly. Thanks.
Illuminati, a secret society do exist. Illuminati.
Illuminati. We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant geekery? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrek. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic. Stay on topic.
Red leader, I'm sorry.
Stay on topic.
I can't say it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo?
So, promo. The Roundtable. Brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
Welcome to my Open Finish Childhood. This week, we're talking 2002. I didn't even look.
2001.
2001's Tomb Raider. A movie that happened one time. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Opinion of Childhood and Riffer on Cineprov, and on panel we have
Matthew W. Quinn, author of The Thing in the Woods.
Jeremy. Hello, this is Daniel, and I don't think I actually have a joke today except to say that Midnight Cowboy was a long, long time ago.
69.
'Twas the summer of 69.
I almost turned you off there.
I went dark for a second.
It has that effect on a lot of people. No. Just says, no.
So, wow, that got loud. I'm sorry. We're obviously doing this because this is the same week releasing that the new Tomb Raider movie came out. This movie was, God, it was a mistake. I don't know. I can't believe this happened.
Well, it was... I think a lot of people forget just how big Lara Croft was at the time. I think Tomb Raider beat Doom for like best-selling PC game ever.
Well, and this might be the biggest video game movie ever at the time, at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it might still be. I don't know. Video game movies are notoriously bad. But I can't even tell you, like... Okay, so... The whole thing about the video game is that she had huge boobs, which apparently happened because of a typo that, at least that's what they tell us. I'm sure it wasn't a typo, but it was supposed to be a mistake. And then at the, whatever, E3, wherever it premiered, everyone thought it was a great thing that she had huge boobs. So then they left it in the game. And that's kind of it. Like,
quick question for Jeremy. Did they ever make a Dead or Alive movie?
Did they?
I want to say they did.
Well,
apparently boobs in video games will get you far.
Was Mila Jovovich in it?
No.
I just now associate bad video game adaptations with her. Or movies that you think came from something else, like Ultraviolet, where it shouldn't actually come from anything, but they're pretending it did.
Yeah.
But
So this movie is kind of in a weird place because Lara Croft Tomb Raider came out in like the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, it was like 95, 96, I think.
And like you said, it was a smash success that spun off like three sequels, and then they rebooted it a couple times, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now you can probably get it for free. I got it for free because no one wants it anymore. But this was also the era when they thought that Angelina Jolie could be an action hero, and they were wrong.
I'll give it credit. Like, she's perfect for it. It's just the movie itself is a trash fire.
I'm going to come right out and say this. I know I'm going to get stuff thrown at me, but I don't care. Angelina Jolie is one of the most overrated actresses ever.
Mila Jovovich?
I didn't have a problem with her acting, but she has very large lips.
Only you would see that as a disadvantage.
But yeah, I mean, she was in Girl Interrupted, which is a great movie, mm-hmm. and she was good in that. But then after this, she does what? Tomb Raider. She was in.
Wasn't she in The Net? Which one of those cyber
Hackers?
Hackers. She was in Hackers.
She was in Gone 60 Seconds, which was terrible. She was in Maleficent, which sucked.
To be fair, like, she's one of the few actresses that excelled in TV. I mean, in successive years, she had George Wallace, which. Like, she got an Emmy for, and then she had Gia, which I think she also got an Emmy for.
Oh, that was a TV movie?
Yeah, HBO.
All right. But that was still, like,
95, 96.
There you go. Yeah. So she hasn't really done anything worthwhile since Girl Interrupted.
So you didn't like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I suppose?
It was fine, but not because of her performance. She was just sort of there.
It was a remake, right?
Wanted was terrible.
No, Hitchcock did make it Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but it was completely different.
Okay, how about Salt?
Salt is crap.
Saw that. You could put a gun to my head. I would not be able to tell you what happened.
If we're talking about crap she made, she was in Beowulf.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The stop action. And Sky Captain of the World of Tomorrow.
I like that movie. But again, not because of her, because she was barely in it.
Well, the guy who directed Sky Captain hasn't made a single thing after, so
I know.
There you go.
I know.
Just steampunk masturbation. I can't. I don't have time for it.
She was Olympias in Alexander, where she spoke in this bizarre accent. That's
that movie.
That's right. She was in that.
Speaking of dumpster fires, Jesus Christ. I mean, she's been in boring movies, too. She was in The Good Shepherd. She was in The Tourist.
Ooh, The Good Shepherd. That was painful.
That's 3 hours of disappointment.
Yes, I know. I was in theaters when I saw that.
Also, that should have been a miniseries.
It should have been.
It should have been.
Something like The Americans or something, right? That could have worked.
Yeah.
It's just, it's Matt Damon being sexually depressed like for three and a half. He has sex once in that movie and just yearns for it again for 3 hours. It's really something.
So in other words, it was just them filming Matt Damon on any typical day?
Gone in 60 Seconds is a stay tuned.
Oh, I've never seen that movie.
It's fine. It's Nick Cage.
Yeah, it's if you go in knowing it's going to be ridiculously dumb, you'll enjoy it.
Daniel, why don't you give us our plot synopsis?
If you insist. So Lara Croft is a Tomb Raider who is also apparently...
The end.
Yeah. What, and she's some sort of British nobility? Who's like heir to some huge manor or something. Anyway, she lives in this giant mansion, but and she apparently buys all her stuff by stealing from First Nationers in their tombs, hence her name. And apparently there was some conspiracy involving the Illuminati, and yes, they do identify themselves as the Illuminati, to steal some sort of alien artifact that had been destroyed 5,000 years ago that could somehow grant power over time travel. I don't know, but anyway, she's finds some letter from her long-dead father that sends her on this quest to destroy this triangle, this time triangle thing, before the Illuminati can get to it.
And which she does by helping them most of the time.
Yes.
Kind of, yeah. So this is directed by nothing Simon West?
Excuse me, Con Air, thank you.
Oh, did he do Con Air?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's something worth mentioning. Like, that was his first movie, too.
Yeah, it's pretty much downhill from there.
The General's Daughter.
And Expendables, too.
Wait, The General's Daughter, is that a porno that he did in order to make money?
Please, it's John Travolta. He couldn't even...
disprove what I just said.
I don't know, that sounds like a lot of thetans he'd be dealing with. He did The Mechanic.
Well, and my understanding, The General's Daughter involves a lot of weird... sex stuff, so maybe there's thetans involved in that too.
Yeah, that's funny. He's directing more now than he used to. That's even worse.
Probably. Yeah, but what is he directing?
Gun-Shy and Stratton came out last year, and something called Tsunami LA in pre-production.
Coming to the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, right? It looks like tripe. All this looks like tripe. Oh, whatever. So we start off on a gun kata scene, which turns out... The second I saw this, I'm like, this is the panic room from the X-Men movies.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The danger room?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's all fake. It's all not real.
Can you imagine the X-Men trapped in one room? That would be amazing. I would pay to see that.
I've read Old Man Logan, and it ends with Wolverine killing everyone.
I would pay to see that.
Yeah.
While being mind-controlled by Mysterio, who thought he was killing everyone else.
Yes.
Spoilers, I guess.
See, this is when I knew I was going to hate this movie, because it was a fake out. Originally, it looked like this exciting thing where it was like the opening of Indiana Jones, where it's her finding her first big find, and then she unveils a trap, and then it turns out just to be a simulation.
Well, and let's back up. It's exactly a knockoff in Indiana Jones, because she enters a room, and there's it's like a colonnade, and it's all brown, and it's all whatever, but up on a pedestal off in the distance with some giant thing behind it is a glowing reliquary. And then a robot comes out, and you're like, oh, this is going to be shit.
Yes.
The second, the moment you see that robot, you're like...
I wouldn't have even cared if there were stakes involved, but once you realize it's a simulation, you're just realizing, oh, this is a waste of my time.
Well, and here's the thing. Indiana Jones, to me, at least, works because... Like all these things, like The Exorcist. If you're watching an Exorcist, you have to believe for 2 hours that the Catholics are right and God exists in this very specific way. In Indiana Jones, you're not sure what to believe, and there's only a miracle in the last 20 minutes. That's why it works. In the first 5 minutes of this, you're like, oh, the bullshit isn't piled high enough for me to to care. And again, if I could have turned it off... I would have, because again, there's nothing to sink your teeth into. If there's magic, that's what the movie, the knockoff, I guess, the better movie that comes out 3 years later does right. National Treasure, there's no magic. And it's a real group. It's the Masons. And it's stuff that happens.
And John Boyd is also in it.
John Boyd played his cards correct for once in his career. Whatever.
For the first time since, like, 1980.
So you didn't like Anaconda?
I can't say that I did.
We did that. We already did that.
You can enjoy Anaconda without actually liking it. It's not a movie you like.
I mean, is it Ice-T?
Oh, in Anaconda?
Ice Cube. No, but who are they listening to rap at the beginning? Is it Ice Cube as well? Oh, I mean, we are doing, I guess, stay tuned, spoiler for... a few months from now, we are going to do a Deep Blue Sea, and Deepest Bluest is going to be everywhere.
Deep Blue Sea. Oh, my God. That
head is like a shark spin.
Look, guys, in his own oven.
So, welcome back to the show, Samuel L. Jackson. But we're not even close to that joy. Essentially, what I'm most interested in this movie is, as we were talking about at the top, she's this movie character... like video games, and here they have a
prolonged shower scene after her training montage, followed by a tasteful side boob.
Yeah, walking around naked in front of her butler to annoy him.
Three-quarter boob. But what I was going to say, too, is this movie doesn't know what it wants to do, because it doesn't know if it wants to sexualize her or not, and for about three-quarters of the movie, it doesn't, except for these two scenes. That scene at the beginning, where it's not side boob, it's like three-quarter boob. Twice.
There's in the whole beginning scene, there's three scene sequences that are kind of sexualizing her, and two of them are kind of stupid. Like the scene where the robot, she's fighting the robot, and it's on top of her, and she's groaning a lot. Then the completely gratuitous shower scene, and then she's the whole butler strip show thing.
Full disclosure, I saw this in theaters when I was a young lad of 13 years old, and that scene is one of the few that stuck with me.
You came of age in the theater right there.
I walked down a man.
I saw that when I was probably a junior in high school, so I was a little older, and I don't really remember. I remember it being there. I don't remember having an opinion.
I will say, though, I did give this movie credits for having none of her underlings, the nerdy tech guy or Hillary, the butler, like having a thing for her. You know, like they weren't trying to get with her. They weren't like flirty. They weren't flirty.
I will say this about Laura too. She was at least in control. Like it was never a situation where anybody was dominating her or forcing her to do it. She was always doing it of her own volition.
Well, and then the rest of the time, I mean, women with big boobs aside, she's just wearing a tank top and like yoga pants. Like she's not sexualized really. And that's okay. Until the last sequence where the camera slows down and they just watch her running away in slow motion, bouncing out of control.
Oh, that was a tribute to the video game.
it loses all the points it gained for the first two thirds of the movie where she was just a person doing a thing. And she was trying to be that kind of badass action heroine. And then they're just like, now let's watch her boobs bounce like she's Pamela Anderson on Baywatch. It's you lose the points you earn if you do that, man.
Wow, feminist critique of Tomb Raider. We're going there.
We're not the only ones, man. This movie was destroyed. I think it had, of all places where perverts live, IMDb, it has a 5.5 out of 10.
That's generous.
That's generous.
It sounds like an Aruba ad. They said Aruba where happiness lives. IMDb where perverts live.
That and YouTube and Instagram.
And Reddit.
I will say, though, it wastes its best assets. Chris Berry as the butler Hillary is funny. He's, for those of you who watch old sci-fi, he's Rimmer from Red Dwarf, and he's very funny. He delivers his lines dryly. At one point, there's an incursion into their house, and he takes 10 minutes to strap on body armor, just walks around with a shotgun shooting things.
I'm still giggling that Nick said assets just then.
I mean, the porn parody of Red Dwarf, his name is still Rimmer.
Oh, that was good. I'll give you that. We should get out of this house. Effectively, one day a clock starts a-ringing in the, like, the underneath the stairs, and she busts the door down and realizes that this is no ordinary clock. It runs backwards, because apparently all the planets are aligning because bullshit.
Now, this thing is, like, 5,000 years old, and they predicted that it would be activated at some point in 5,000 years. How in God's name, and I know that there were some civilizations that were astronomers, but how in God's name did they know all nine planets existed and they could monitor their orbits that accurately? We weren't able to do that until at least the 16th century, and not even then, we were mostly wrong.
Yeah, Pluto wasn't even discovered, I don't think, until the very late 19th or early 20th century.
1930s.
And it's not even a planet anymore.
Pluto shall always be a planet.
So should Ceres, which is a bigger planet.
Ceres is bigger?
Yeah, much. Hmm. Now, that being said, this is because they were so busy masturbating over conspiracies that they skipped three steps, which is that groups like even the Masons believe that there are societies older than our own that were taller, stronger, smarter, that got destroyed in something, the Great Deluge or some horseshit. Like, this is all horseshit.
Of course.
But the thing is, they don't bother to explain it, so it doesn't matter. Like, there's a novelization you should have read before. This is in the Lara Croft comic book series, right?
Which I'm sure exists.
I'm sure. But again, we're looking at the end of this movie, and there's like this giant... It looks like the kind of thing that would be in like a science teacher's classroom where all these orbs float around a giant thing and they spin and then they all line up at the exact right moment. This is not 5,000 years old, man. It looks like a planetarium. It looks like Epcot Center.
Oh, dang. You stole my joke there. I was going to make a Disney World.
Yeah, there you go.
We're going to need to get into one of the weirdest things about this movie, which is that Daniel Craig is in it.
Yeah. Fuck this director. I'm sorry. You have an English actor speaking with a shitty American accent who doesn't need to be. Why does he have to be American? It doesn't matter. And Daniel Craig is in... Never put Daniel Craig in shorts.
I only bring it up now because it was his best line delivery when they discovered the planetarium, where he looks at Lauren's like, betcha $50 the piece is in the sun. He sounded like one of the Bill Schwartzky super fans from Saturday Night Live. And
they had a missed character opportunity there because she kind of sneers at him for being it for the money, and he could be like, yeah, well, I'm not, you know, an aristocrat. I have to make a living.
You should put on your American accent. You should do it for the money if you were not an aristocrat.
God. Do it for the pounds, dollars.
Meanwhile, of course, Angelina Jolie and John Voight are American as the day is long, and while they might speak with a mid-Atlantic accent, they are not They're not English.
Angelina Jolie does an okay accent, and frankly, so does John Boyd.
Well, they're fine, but why let them get an English accent when an actual Englishman...
Like, doesn't see the dialect coach.
Just let him speak with his accent. It doesn't matter. Like, I totally believe an English person keeping someone else's national treasures in his like in his study. Like, I bet you Daniel Craig in real life has something Ethiopian above his toilet. I mean, meanwhile, like Chris Berry, remember, playing Hillary, is the only one who gets to be like, "Oh, you dress like a lady," and we're just like, "Of course, at least let him have some fun." What's this bad archaeologist's name? Do you remember his name?
I thought
it was West.
It might be. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. Manfred Powell. Manfred Powell.
Wait, his name's Manfred and he's American? I call him.
No. That's Daniel Craig.
Oh.
The bad guy who has a hat, Ian Glenn.
Sir Jorah.
Okay, yeah.
No. And so, essentially, once this clock is found, Laura takes it to an antique guy.
Mm-hmm.
Antiquarian. Oh. Mm-hmm. Word of the day calendar.
Somebody should have been Malcolm McDowell, but wasn't.
Oh, that would have been so much better. Time for a little bit of ultraviolence. It just calls it in. But yeah, essentially, and that lets Manfred Powell know that she has the thing. The Illuminati is real, by the way. Who cares?
They all sit on these purple velvet thrones that we see. It really does look like Alex Jones's wet dream.
And frankly, my wife looked up at one point and said, "A meeting would never work that way. No one's facing each other." And then looked back down at her phone.
Okay, time to glorify people. I'll give credit to this movie for giving Ian Glenn a chance to show his range. He's an oily, backstabbing bastard, and in Game of Thrones, he's this lovelorn, middle-aged dork.
Oh, that was the guy from Game of Thrones?
Yeah, he's Sir Jorah.
Oh.
I kept thinking he almost looked like Bryan Cranston. I was like, almost Bryan Cranston is talking again. And he can throw a punch. It is a weird, like, gender politics to just see him, like, lay out Lara Croft after punching her square in the jaw. But yeah, there you go. He's Jorah Mormont.
Yeah.
Jorah the Mormon. He's also in a series called Clever Man, which apparently didn't matter. Ew, he's in a lot of shit. He's in Downton Abbey, which is, I guess, the porn version.
I was about to say, you mean Downton?
Yeah, Downton Abbey. I'm daunted by that show. Anyway, so let's just ramble.
Well, this movie. First, we need to get to the big set piece where they apparently the triangle was split in two and scattered to the opposite ends of the earth, which means they're on the same continent, by the way.
Right.
The first one's in, what was it, Cambodia?
Yeah.
Yeah, in a temple that they destroy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel bad for whoever was worshiping there, like, earlier that day. But effectively, there are...
Oh, that millennium. It was pretty overgrown.
Whatever. There were kids in it.
Was that actually a kid? I thought it was, like, young, some, like, weird young Lara Croft hallucination.
You know what? That's something we should bring up. This movie is bullshit. It has unearned flashbacks. It has hallucinations. Mm-hmm. She flashes at several points to other things that are happening. None of this is earned, man. Like, Indiana Jones doesn't suddenly see Jesus and he goes, "Hey, Indy, the tomb is over there." Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah, the little Siberian girl who's like, "You're going to risk everything to save your dad."
That was the second place. That was in Cambodia.
Yeah, that's still Laura, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I thought. In Cambodia and in Russia.
All right.
Again, shit. But effectively, thanks to a letter she finds from her dad hidden somewhere that we don't see.
It was like in the lining of a book. She had to like slice a book open. Like the cover of a book.
Yeah.
Okay, so people...
So this movie wouldn't work today because no one reads books.
Yeah. There she is with a knife and a Kindle.
pop the screen off the Kindle.
There you go.
But, I mean, okay, so the thing about Indiana Jones was people were pissed off that he destroyed stuff, but he just wanted to put it in a museum, whatever, which is... Very, you know, first world white guy. But she's literally just fucking destroying things, but the bad guys destroy a little bit more.
A statue literally comes to life, proving a whole bunch of ancient religions to be true, and she just shoots it.
Yeah, a lot of them. But I mean,
time for some deicide.
But I mean, on top of, like, but again, this is either a world where all the gods exist or none of them exist, and then ancient people were just awesome, and I think it's going for the latter. Like, that ancient people just figured everything out, because this movie can't decide anything.
It worked for the mummy, because the mummy was at least corny enough to, where you would accept that in this world, all religions exist. So that curse would totally exist, because it at least gave something for people to ground to with the whole 10 plagues of Egypt bit, because everybody knows about that. This was just weird.
Well, I could realize you fixed this movie. Daniel Craig, I love him to no end, but if you replace him with Brendan Fraser, better movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because then it becomes funny. Daniel Craig can't... I've seen the Bond movies. He can't deliver a joke to save his life. He's either saving kids from the Holocaust or not laughing at people dying in Bond. Like, he's just not funny. He's just not... I mean, not that you can make a lot of Holocaust jokes,
but... I think Munich was kind of funny.
Oh, I was thinking of that one that happened between...
Defiance.
Defiance, thank you.
Yeah, who do you get to play a Jew? A blonde, blue-eyed guy.
Well, consider that the ultimate middle finger to Hitler.
You mean to casting?
I was just saying.
You know who should have played him? Roth, the bear Jew.
Eli Roth.
I mean, he can't act to save his life, but yeah. He looks Jewish. I mean, he does. Daniel Craig looks apparently like an American in short pants. He should not wear... First of all, he should not wear short pants ever. But second of all, he shouldn't wear them with white socks up to his shin.
Well,
he
looks like a German tourist. I'm pretty sure those were cargo pants.
It was 2001. They might have been Django jeans.
Ooh.
Wow.
I'm sorry, my bad.
See, kids, back in the old days.
Back in the old days, we didn't have enough room for our guns in our holsters, so we needed pants that could go down to our ankles.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Bowling for Columbine. That was a topical reference from 17 years ago.
Jesus.
So, coming soon to Criterion.
Yes, it is. Good Lord, I have no idea why, but yes, it is.
So, from here, Laura Croft starts humping a giant log so that it punctures a womb, and then all the statues come to life, like Daniel says. She grabs the magical CGI floating thing.
Well, this is after she was, like, yelling at the Illuminati for being wrong. Because they were like...
Political statements, secret societies are wrong.
Yeah, all she needed to do if she wanted to stop the Illuminati was just delay them for about 30 seconds. And then the movie would be over.
Yeah, but this is the Indiana Jones thing of her being like, I do kind of want to see what happens.
Oh.
Right? No, I mean, but again, this movie is cribbing from a better movie, but not improving. It's just making it cheesier, right?
Well, I figured maybe she was helping the Illuminati just to get to the point she could steal the thing from them.
Which is what she does.
Mm-hmm.
And then, effectively, they steal her clock back.
It was her dad's clock, so they steal it so they can get the next piece, but she's got the first piece.
And with that in mind, they need to work together because whatever. And meanwhile, creepy McPowell guy is getting a back massage by a woman walking on his spine. And Laura is now dressed in a sari and, like, apologize. Like, and then this is where she starts having hallucinations for no reason, right?
Was this also around the time where she sneaks up on Daniel Craig taking a shower and, like...
Yeah, that's the end of the scene.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like, she starts out getting a blessing from a monk, and then all the monks are gone, and she's getting a different blessing, and then all of a sudden Daniel Craig's in the shower.
That scene where she drinks the tea, and they're like, it tastes quite bad, but it is good for you.
And apparently the monk gives her permission to destroy the temple.
Yeah, apparently.
And, but yeah, that's when we see what should have been Daniel Craig's taint, but, like... Yeah.
It was a very tastefully lit scene, let's put it that way.
And like, tables just happen to be in the way after he flashes the maid.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you can get a little film studies here. Female nudity is titillating, male nudity is funny. Or the tries.
And then he makes the joke, I guess I need to take a cold shower,
after
an American who has an erection.
Oh, goodness me, this brunette British woman has caused my penis to become erect.
By acting vaguely threatening toward me.
It sounds like a Dear Abby post. a Dear Abby subscriber writing into a penthouse forum. I cannot believe this happened to me. I saw someone in a low-cut tank top and had an erection. It lasted more than 20 minutes.
I prayed for dear sweet Lord Jesus to take it away, but it did not work.
He looked so hot up on that cross. Jim Caviezel. Man, I can. I'm Catholic. I can just confess all this away. So from here, they realize they have to go to the South Pole or Antarctica, Siberia. This was something that bothered me to no end because, like, everyone is bundled up, everyone is cold except for Lara Croft, who just has a tank top on and an open jacket. I'm like, no.
The fire of passion inside her keeps her warm.
The fire of daddy issues, maybe.
Yeah. But I mean, like. None of this makes sense. None of it is cast right. Whatever.
Well, when they go to the second tomb, this is the one part of the movie that works, where they go through that planetarium thing, and then they retrieve the second piece, and the head Illuminati dude saying that whole speech, and then Powell just goes, oh, enough of this twaddle, and just shoots everybody. I'm like, finally, somebody's at least acknowledging how stupid everything is.
Here's the thing. Like, you either buy into the Illuminati bullshit or you don't. And I agree with you. It's stupid. But you have to commit. No one commits to anything in this movie.
Perfect timing.
So, good. Here's the thing. You got to either commit or you don't. Like, because in National Treasure, for example, I hate to keep bringing this up, but, like, they keep the Masons are a thing. They exist. They had a treasure. You just go all the way. Same thing with Indiana Jones. The Hebrew texts are true. The translation matters. Everything matters. The name of Jehovah matters. That's why it works. Here she's just like, ah, fuck this shit. If the words of the incantation don't matter, none of it matters. It just doesn't matter. Like. whatever. This movie can't decide what it is. And the problem is, since the Illuminati are not 5,000 years old, they can claim whatever they want, but they were created in the 1830s. There's a document that
they only lasted 15 years or so?
Well, it's like that FBI
text.
That's
what they want you to think.
Uh-huh. Exactly. It's an FBI text that said, we should form a secret society. That's all it is. Topical. But that's what happened. It doesn't matter. None of this matters. But then if you say, it's bullshit, these 5,000-year-old people were just wrong, I want to see through time. Smoke some good ganja, man. It doesn't matter. None of this matters. Literally none of it. Whatever. Fuck it. Go.
Well, after that, they get the two halves, and then they find out there's one piece that's still missing, and in order to get Laura to tell them where it is, because she apparently knows somehow, or at least as a guess, they kill Daniel Craig. Like, throw a knife through him, and then he falls and gets crushed by the rotating planetarium thing, which means she has to go back
and underwater, too.
So, much like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, it's killing a Bond in order to get the hero to do something.
And it works. She figures it out because, you know, I guess,
because
why not?
She's the best.
She's the best.
Well, she can also figure out that she can just turn the knife around by the handle rather than gripping it by the blade.
That's later.
I had the same thought. God damn it. Don't grab the knife. She's bleeding. You know, it's a PG-13 to get one scene with blood, and this is how she used it.
Yeah. Ugh, gross.
Well, the whole thing is there was like some little tiny piece hidden in the clock that then she puts in the triangle and then uses it to talk to her dead father.
And she's like, I can bring you back. And he's like, don't do that because then I'd have to be in the sequel. whatever. I mean,
then we'd have to pretend we don't hate each other.
Yeah.
Then we'd have to pretend a lot of things.
Like, do you think that he's just hanging out in her basement at this point? And she's got, like, chains of the
He
floor?
Doesn't invite her.
No, she doesn't invite him.
Let's oh, no, no. Well, I mean, neither of them had acted in a while. Like, what was the last thing she was even in?
I want to say Maleficent was the last live-action thing she was in. I know she's
They're making a sequel to that, too.
Gross. I think she's directed some stuff.
And she's been in the 3 Kung Fu Panda movies. Ugh.
I like the first
one.
Yeah,
those are good movies, actually.
First one was fun.
Well, okay, fine. The first one was fun, I guess. She was in The Tourist with Johnny Depp.
Never saw it.
You're right.
That
movie's rated the same on IMDb, by the way. It's gross.
So, anyway, do we want to wrap up this plot such as it is?
Hey, Tim Dalton's in that. Yes, please.
So what she uses time travel for instead is to, like they were saying, go back to the time when Powell was tossing the knife at Daniel Craig and freezes time midair and then slowly turns the knife around and then back to the guy that threw it. And then he gets stabbed. And then what, somehow from there, at this point, I was just checking Facebook. I wasn't really paying attention.
That's it. effectively. The
temple starts collapsing.
Well, and he gets wounded, but he doesn't die. So then they have a fight scene. Oh, and she destroys time travel forever for anyone.
Oh, yeah, she shoots the triangle.
They fight in a very uninteresting fight scene for a while. He ends up, well, he coaxes her into it because he has the locket with her mom's picture, because he was the one who turned out to have shot her dad.
Yep. None of this mattered.
Well,
considering how much she angsts over her dad throughout the entire movie, that might be some bit of emotional closure she wants.
That's what they were going for. It just doesn't work.
But, and then B, we would have actually shown closure if she could have gone without it. If she didn't need to fight him, I'm past this. But instead, she has to go back.
I've got my goodbye from my father. And
prove that she's not past it, because he would have died anyway. Right? Like, it doesn't show character development. It's just disappointment, man. Salt was nominated for an Oscar?
Well, the way...
Mr.
Croft has been gone for probably 15 or so years, and she's still angsting about it. Now, this would have worked much better if she was a lot younger.
Sure would have. A lot of things would have worked better if she was younger.
I mean, the character.
Oh.
Like, make this an origin story, because she's clearly had a lot of adventures before.
They did that in the one video game, Tomb Raider video game, that I ever played on the Dreamcast back when that was a thing.
Yeah.
We found the one guy who had a Dreamcast.
Woo!
It was a good system. Soul Calibur of Sun. Anyway, though, it does show, like, teenage Laura with a mentor, and the mentor turned out to be some evil dude who gets killed when you beat the first level, and that's as far as I ever got, because it was so boring.
Like this movie.
Yes.
Well, this movie, I don't think, was boring. It was stupid.
No, I just didn't care. I found it very boring, because, like, for it not to be boring, I would have wanted some dramatic tension. There's never tension. She's incredible, right? And she can fly, kind of.
It's like a sixth grader writing fan fiction. They just constantly write, oh, she's the best. My point is, they tried the whole origin story in the past, and it just didn't really work either, because she was already such a badass, because this is written like a sixth grader's fan fiction. They constantly have to say, oh, this character is perfect and has no flaws, because it's secretly supposed to be me. And
that's Mary Sue.
Yeah, that's what this movie feels like.
Well, I mean, and you said daddy issues, but the daddy issues don't affect her in the way. Like, it's not like she's living in a shadow. It's not like people refer to her, like, as in an inferior. It's not like he was always, like, they make it sound like he was a step ahead, but it doesn't seem like he was really, it was anything that impeded her in any way, so it doesn't matter. Like,
she's got a giant kick-ass mansion that she's living in,
but she doesn't care about that either. Like, David Bones. Anyway, we're out of time. So, Matt, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Jeremy, and then we'll go to Daniel, and then we'll end it all.
Well, I rented this movie from Amazon, downloaded it to my Kindle, and watched most of it on the elliptical in my apartment gym, and it kept me entertained. But it's really not worth seeing at least more than once. I mean, it's entertaining. It's not boring, but it is so dumb.
Jeremy?
I was working at a movie theater when this came out, and I saw it for free, and I still hated it. It's bad.
I don't really know what else to say. I mean, I just remember this being a huge tentpole back in the day. Like, it was actually really successful when it first got released, but it just feels, watching it today, like something that they bury on a Sunday afternoon on cable just to fill the time in the schedule. It's just so insignificant. It doesn't mean anything, and it really doesn't...
What does it all mean?
Well, it doesn't give itself a reason to even exist. I didn't care about whether or not they found that stupid triangle or anything, so what was the point?
Yeah, and I guess for mine, it was just, I mean, everyone, like, you're right, it's boring, it's worthless. The CGI doesn't make sense, because it was all filmed on a soundstage, but they didn't make any difference between the CGI, the outside, like, they didn't make it look like anything.
Yeah, the CGI didn't really hold up very well.
Well, then I guess, on top of it, why do it? You had a huge budget, clearly. Make the budget do anything. To actually fly them to Siberia. Like, get some shots of something. Anything. This movie is a disappointment because, not that it had potential, but it could have been anything. It makes me want to watch National Treasure again, because that was fun.
Yeah.
That was enjoyable. This is zero. This is boring. It's like the excitement is replaced with disappointment. I don't know. It's a shame, man. I don't get it. I don't get why you'd watch it. I don't get why you'd make it. I mean, I guess it made money, so...
Because it's a sequel. Well, that's why you'd make it, because Tomb Raider is such a big video game. You got to cash in.
And, I mean, she looked good. She was fine. She's acting against nothing. You know, she's acting against a comic relief and assholes. But, like, there's not a lot here. But I guess stay tuned. Next week, we're watching a Nick Cage movie. So stay tuned next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Illuminati, a secret society do exist. Illuminati, Illuminati, a secret society do exist.
Are you looking for a podcast that's a little bit out of the ordinary, a little bit crazy, and a little bit on the rambunctious side? Well, if I got something for you, it's called Vitamin Geek Podcast. My name's Corey Keelan. I'm the host and creator of Vitamin Geek Podcast, and I'm here to invite you to listen to my show. Each episode, I'm coming to you with whatever I think is important at the time. Maybe it's a new movie, maybe it's a comic book, maybe it's horror, maybe it's drag queens, who knows? I love to talk, and I just love to get you guys involved in the conversation. I invite you all to check out my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/vitamingeekpodcast. I would love to hear your feedback. So please join me and check us out here, Vitamin Geek Podcast, here on the ESO Network.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!